The next case on our calendar is 05-2134, Preferred Capital versus Power Engineering Group.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Mark Shearer. I represent the appellants. I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. The forum selection clause at issue in this matter is unenforceable for two main reasons. The first reason is that to enforce it would be counter to the public policy established in the Bremen versus Zapata Offshore Company, a 1972 United States Supreme Court case, in which the United States Supreme Court indicated that a forum selection clause should be allowed if it eliminates uncertainty and creates predictability by establishing a forum for the resolution of disputes. The second issue is, and the second reason it should not be enforced, is because it's just unreasonable in its application and in the way it's drafted. When you look at the Bremen versus Zapata Offshore, the court goes into great detail about the enforcement of forum selection clauses prior to the court rendering its decision in the Bremen. And in that case, they indicated that forum selection clauses were against public policy primarily. The Bremen then went forward to set forth criteria under which a forum selection clause would be enforceable. So not every forum selection clause is going to be enforceable unless it meets certain criteria as established by the Bremen versus Zapata Offshore Company. The criteria that's set forth is first, it cannot have any fraud or overreaching. Secondly, and the courts differ on this, it has to be of a commercial nature or not violate the public policy of the forum in which the forum selection clause is going to be enforced. And also, it has to be reasonable. As far as fraud and overreaching are concerned, in this case, there's definitely overreaching. The learned opinion set forth by Judge Manos of the Northern District of Ohio in Preferred Capital versus Sarasota Kennel Club indicates that there was overreaching and fraud in this particular circumstance involving this forum selection clause. The fraud existed because there was a master program agreement that set forth an agreement between Preferred Capital and Norvergence. Norvergence was the originator of the leases. Preferred Capital accepted those leases on assignment. The master program agreement between the two parties indicated that the forum between those two would be Ohio. What happened next was Norvergence went out and they obtained signatures on leases from various customers, the appellants in this matter. Preferred Capital would then, or I'm sorry, Norvergence would then shop the lease. They'd look for a leasing company to accept the customer. Once the leasing company accepted the customer, Norvergence would then accept that lease. Norvergence, however, did not accept that lease until they found a leasing company. So what we have here is a situation where Norvergence and Preferred Capital knew where a forum would be, but the customer had no idea. The forum selection clause at issue indicates that the forum is going to be in the state of the renter's principal office or in the state where the assignee is.
But that designation, however, of the forum is in the master agreement, is it not?
It's in the master agreement, but the customers aren't privy to that master agreement.
Is it also in the leasing or in the leasing agreement or in the agreement with the customers?
No, Your Honor. There's
but it's
no
only contained in the master agreement, and they wouldn't otherwise know about it.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, I would argue that it was kept away from the customer's knowledge. There are several different leasing companies that Preferred Capital would deal with. Preferred Capital knew with whom they were going to deal, but they didn't inform the customers at the time of signing with whom they were going to deal, and they didn't inform them before Norvergence accepted the contract.
That was the basis of the United States District Court decision.
Yes, Your Honor, in Preferred Capital versus Kennel Club. So there is fraud, there's overreaching. When we look at overreaching, there's an Ohio case of Gross versus Gross that defines overreaching when a party attempts to outwit the other parties by artifice or cunning. That's exactly what we had here in this case. There's artifice, there's cunning. Why is there artifice and cunning? Because Preferred Capital and Norvergence, they're keeping the forum secret. They're not letting the customers know the possible forums in which they could be sued down the line.
The customer knew, if the customer read the contract that they signed, that this was an issue, didn't they not?
Yes, Your Honor. They would know that this could be a
possible
issue.
So where's the fraud? I guess where's the fraud? You use the word fraud as if it's sort of a word that's out here in the air. Where's the fraud here? Go ahead.
The fraud comes in, Your Honor, because they're not letting the customers know the possible forums.
And if the customer asked the question, we got the parallel evidence rule obviously here too. Also, I mean, you have a written contract, and the customer reads the contract and knows that if there's a suit to be filed, it could be in anywhere in the country. Apparently,
I would say anywhere in the world, Your Honor,
world,
with relation
okay.
to this forum selection clause.
Isn't the customer then on notice that's an issue?
They're on notice, perhaps, that's an issue, but when we talk about notice has to be specifically as to what forum. When we talk about
notice. That's not fraud, is it?
Oh, sure it is, Your Honor. It's fraud when Norvergence has the information, and Norvergence can just reject that contract with impunity because the customer has already signed it, and they're not letting the customer know later on what they already know. See, Norvergence knew exactly where that form was going to be when Norvergence accepts the agreement.
Is there evidence that the customers asked Norvergence, where will this suit be filed? Where do I have to defend or whatever? Or if I file a suit, and Norvergence told them something that's not true?
I don't believe there is evidence in the record as to that, Your Honor, but I don't know that would be relevant as to whether or not the form selection clause would be enforceable as it is here, because there are so many different factors that weigh against the enforceability of this forum selection clause. When you look at a forum selection clause isn't like any other kind of a contract clause. It has to be looked at with a different set of rules, a different set of guidelines. It's not just any clause. It's a clause that actually waives a fundamental constitutional right. Therefore, it's just not on its face enforceable if you can show that there's unreasonableness, if you can show that there's fraud or overreaching. Now, when we look at the fraud issue, and we look at the Bremen case, it talks about fraud or overreaching. Even if this panel doesn't believe that there's fraud, there's still overreaching.
I think that's your stronger argument, to me anyway. I don't see the fraud here, but I'm only one of six or seven. But your overreaching is a stronger argument, it seems to me.
I would agree with you, Your Honor, because when you look at the definition of overreaching.
Good choice.
You don't have to. But, yeah.
Smart counsel.
I would agree with you in that the definition of overreaching talks about outwitting and attempting to use artifice and cunning, and I think that's exactly what happened here. There was artifice and cunning. They were trying to take advantage of these people. When you look at the entire scheme.
Counsel, let me just ask you a question. Is there anywhere in the in the contract between the renters and Preferred Capital where they say, once this contract is assigned, we are obligated to then disclose the home state or the location of the assignee?
No, Your Honor, there's nowhere in the contract that indicates that Norvergence.
But there is an upfront understanding by the renters renters that they would be subject to either suit in their home state or where the assignee is located, correct?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question, Your Honor.
What was their first understanding, your clients, for example, of where they could potentially be sued?
What was their first understanding? I would believe it would have to be New Jersey, Your Honor.
Because
Norvergence was located in New Jersey. And New Jersey has a certain set of laws as well, Your Honor. And if the customer is going to presume that New Jersey is going to apply, then a completely different set of laws is going to apply with relation to the definition of a consumer. A different set of laws is going to apply with relation to the enforceability of the forum selection clause itself. If you look at a New Jersey case of Capelco Capital versus Shapiro, that case involved a lawyer who entered into a photocopier lease agreement. It had a very similar forum selection clause that we have at issue here. The one main difference was that forum selection clause actually referred to jurisdiction, whereas this one refers only to venue. The one we have at issue here only refers to venue, and I think that's a distinction as well. But at any rate, Shapiro was a lawyer who entered into this agreement, and the court in New Jersey determined that the forum selection clause was not, in fact, enforceable. It just did not give notice of the particular form. The form continues to float. And not only does the form float, Your Honor, but the law itself floats. The applicable law floats with relation to who's going to be holding that lease at any point in time. So when the lease is executed, New Jersey law applies. When the lease is assigned, arguably Ohio law applies, and I would argue that that does not provide the predictability, does not provide the notice, does not provide the elimination of uncertainty, which the Bremen Court said was so important in drafting a form selection clause. This form selection clause is just completely defective on its face.
Counsel, do you believe that these non-Ohio businesses, these 13 businesses, all understood New Jersey law before they signed these contracts and believed that that's what they were going to be subject to?
I don't know that there's anything in the record that would indicate that. It's my belief that these people probably didn't actually even read the clause. That's my opinion. That's my indication from talking to my clients.
And you know that failure to read a clause in a contract is not an excuse to get them out of the contract.
Yes, and I'm not arguing that. What I'm arguing is that this form selection clause, even if they did read it, doesn't give them notice as to where the suit would be, doesn't give them the elimination of uncertainty, does not give them predictability as to form.
Well, then didn't they have a duty then as a businessman contracting to say, I don't like this clause, I'm not going to sign it, clear it up for me?
I don't think they did have a duty to do that, especially under the circumstances of this case.
Why not? Why not? That every other contracting business person has the duty to say, I don't like this clause, I'm not going to sign it, and not come back later and say, well, I didn't understand what you were making me do because I didn't read it.
Well, again, Your Honor, form selection clauses are completely different from other types of clauses in contracts. Could they have done that? Yes, of course they could
have.
So
you don't have an obligation to read form selection clauses because they're different?
They're different. Well, you should read a form selection clause, of course. I can never say
you should. If you don't understand it, what should you do next?
Well, of course, I would think you should ask somebody about it and ask the party you're going to contract with about that form selection clause.
And if you don't do that step, what's the remedy?
You can argue that it's not enforceable like we're doing here because it doesn't give the appropriate notice.
If you don't read it and you don't ask questions, then you can use the defense that it's unenforceable?
Yes.
What you just said.
Yes, because it doesn't give the appropriate notice. It doesn't give the appropriate kinds of waivers that are required of a form selection clause. Again, form selection clause.
How do you know that if you haven't read it?
How do you know that if you haven't read it, Your Honor? I would. You wouldn't know it. But...
So you get out of the contract because you don't read it even... I'm having a hard time understanding how you get out of the contract because you don't read the clause.
Oh, it's not getting out of the contract, Your Honor. It's getting out of the enforceability of a form selection clause that is defective. Form selection clauses have to meet a very high burden, and that high burden is established...
If you have a form selection clause that is confusing, you can come into court and say, I am not subject to it because I didn't read it.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that the person, whether they read it or not, is not subject to it because it doesn't meet the criteria that was set, does not meet the policy that was set in Bremen. Whether the customer read the contract or not is completely irrelevant. Whether they negotiated the contract, that portion of the contract away or not, is irrelevant. I hope that I've answered your question, Your Honor.
Contract law on its head because it relieves a contracting party of any duty to understand or question a contract they're signing. It says if you blindly sign a contract that you haven't read or you haven't asked about and it ends up confusing, you can get out of it.
I'm not saying that at all, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that the form selection clause has to meet the requirements of waiving a constitutional right. This form selection clause does not do that. It's a different kind of standard than any other kind of a clause to a contract. That's why this is different and unique.
And what happens to people's ability to walk away if they don't understand something and it doesn't look right to them? Don't they have a right to walk away from the contract?
They do, but in this circumstance, they couldn't walk away from the contract.
Why?
Because they were bound to it before Norvergence. The Norvergence didn't accept that contract.
They were bound to it before they signed it?
No, they were bound to it when they signed it, but before Norvergence signed it.
Okay, but they didn't have to assign it if they didn't understand it, correct?
Right, but Norvergence had more information than the customer did. Norvergence knew where this form was going to be and didn't share that information with the customer. That's where we have the overreaching. That's where we have the fraud. That's what makes this form selection clause enforceable.
Your Honor, let me take another issue, if I may. It seems to me that a public policy issue here that we need to decide is the issue of inconvenience.
Yes, Your Honor.
It does seem to me that this clause, the result of the clause is, or the ramifications of it are, this is very inconvenient for your clients. What and you can be rough on this, but what principle of law would you have us write with respect to that element of the test for inconvenience?
Well, with relation,
cases go, as you know, their cases go both ways. I mean, it's inconvenient, it's not inconvenient. What's the level of how inconvenient does the forum need to be before a state court says this is just too inconvenient that it's against public policy?
Your Honor, my time seems
to
be
up. You may answer. I'll give you some extra time.
How convenient? Well, it has to show, you have to show that it's actually taking you away from having any kind of a forum to discuss your suit in. So you have to show that there's no forum that you can talk about your complaint in. That's, you know, you're being left with no forum at all. And that's what we have here. These customers are being left with no forum at all.
Well,
these are smaller businesses.
Does the record show the appellee says that you claim that these are mom-and-pop clients or customers, but there's not much in the record to indicate how large, how capable they are of being able to travel around the country to spend these suits?
I can speak to the affidavits I had my clients draft, and those affidavits, like in TrueSight Vision, I indicated the amount of employees that party had. For example, that party had 5 employees. This is not a big company. This is a guy who's he's an optician. He's concentrating on being an optician. He's concentrating on his practice of making people's glasses and fitting glasses. He's not thinking about whether or not the form selection clause in his telephone contract is going to send him to some far-off jurisdiction somewhere.
So we consider the size or the resources, I guess, of a company or a customer to be able to have its case heard in a forum.
Yes, Your Honor.
What else?
Yes, that is true. You can consider even the financial disparity. There's a case of Green versus Picker Corporation that indicates that financial disparity can be considered in determining the inconvenience of the jurisdiction. With relation to these small businesses, there was some financial disparity. For an optician from Philadelphia to send employees as witnesses, to pay for witnesses from other states, such as New Jersey, to come to Ohio to discuss this action, would be a huge burden on a company.
Here,
like
it
that.
Doesn't seem that. Then, in some cases, I would guess it would require defense of a suit would require a number of witnesses. But here, this is a contract. The customers claim that, you know, we purchased this matrix and it doesn't work. It's a technology and it doesn't work. It doesn't take a whole lot of witnesses to come to Ohio to testify to that, I guess, does it?
Well, no. I would take a few, but still, just sending 1, 2, 3 people. For a small business with 5 employees,
right.
That's a huge burden. You've got to pay for airfare. You've got to pay for a hotel. You've got to hire an attorney out of state, somebody you don't even know. It's a huge inconvenience. You've got to do depositions in another state. You might have to show up in that other state for depositions. It is a financial burden on these small businesses, which are the backbone of
our economy. Is economic burden the primary factor in determining inconvenience in your mind?
It is a huge factor. I don't know that you can say any one factor is a primary factor. But yes, it's one of those factors. And if it's big enough in one case, I imagine that one factor alone can tip the scales. But there are other factors that can be considered, such as the what state's law are we going to apply here? And of course, that's a huge question with this choice of law clause we have here. We don't even know what law we're going to apply because that floats along with the assignment. That's one of the factors we can consider. You also want to look at the location of the witnesses, third-party witnesses, people who are going to be dragging this thing, who really don't have a direct connection to one of the parties but may have had a former connection with Norvergence. Those parties are going to want to be brought in as witnesses.
What is your strongest case on inconvenience?
My strongest case on inconvenience, I think, is...
Can you pluck one out of there on short notice? Or do you...
inconvenience... Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of, I think there are two, Your Honor. I think the first one is the financial difficulty for these small businesses, and I think the second one is that we don't even know what controlling law is going to apply here. It's better for these appellees home states to apply their own law, especially since some of the appellee's home states are, have different consumer laws and may incorporate these small businesses into their consumer laws. Is it possible for an Ohio court or some other jurisdiction's court to take a look at another state's law? Sure it is, but it's just more convenient and better for a state to look at its own home state's court. And if you look at convenience too, it's also more convenient for Preferred Capital to have these matters brought in the appellant's home states. It's more convenient for them because if they get a judgment there, they're not gonna have to transfer it anywhere. If they get a judgment here in Ohio, they're gonna have to transfer that judgment to the other state. Case in point, Preferred Capital is going to have a difficulty. They get a judgment here. They're going to have to, let's say they have a Texas customer. They're going to have to transfer that matter to Texas, and Texas so far has deemed these leases to be void ab initio. It's more convenient entirely for these matters to be done in Texas if it involves a Texas customer. We're just going to litigate it twice. You might get a different result here than you're going to get in Texas.
You need to sum up.
Thank you, Your Honor. Not only is it unreasonable for the forum selection clause to be enforced in this matter, there's also the issue of whether or not the Ninth District Court of Appeals even had subject matter jurisdiction. I asked this court to take a look at that and decide that there is no subject matter jurisdiction. Thank you very much for the extra time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I appreciate your consideration.
Ms. O'Brien.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Tammy O'Brien, and I represent Preferred Capital in these matters. The appellants in this case have, in their oral argument to begin with, relied on three cases primarily, assertions of law, which are actually dubious on their face at the moment. They've relied heavily on the Sarasota Kennel Club case out of the Northern District of Ohio. I would argue that after the Sixth Circuit's recent opinion in Associates in Urology, that case is no longer applicable law. The Sixth Circuit, in applying Ohio law, in interpreting Ohio law under this court's Kennecorp decision, has explicitly found that this contract, this Norvergence contract, the form selection clause found therein, is enforceable. They agree with the Seventh Circuit. Judge Posner, writing for the Seventh Circuit, has also written a strong opinion on these very same contracts, these very same Norvergence Forum Selection Clause contracts.
Counsel, could you address the issue that minimum contacts normally for personal jurisdiction is necessary to bring defendants into court within a state? And when you have a forum selection clause that doesn't specify a specific jurisdiction, how can you say that the defendants have knowingly waived their rights to actually give up this idea of minimum contacts with the jurisdiction, that they've knowingly waived the rights and submitted themselves to, say, jurisdiction here in Ohio, as you would have us do?
Your Honor, that is what the contract says. The contract
but
says.
But a knowing and intelligent waiver presumes that a party will know where the court, where the case is going to be heard.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. The appellants, I believe, have conceded that New Jersey would have been their first understanding, would have been where they would go if these contacts had not been assigned, because that was the Norvergence's principal place of business. However, in their brief, they argue that in and of itself could float. If Norvergence's principal place of business changed, they could be required to go anywhere that Norvergence's principal place of business changed to. So that because there is no specific designation of a state in the forum selection clause does not necessarily mean that they know where this was going, that they would know or not, they would be on notice that it could end up, frankly, in any state in the country, even on the first part of that forum selection clause, that the principal place of business of the vendor would be the first place to go had there not been an assignment of the contract. And as to the Chief Justice's inquiries.
Well, could it end up anywhere? Could your client, just for sheer for the singular purpose of making it inconvenient to the other party, decide to litigate these in Alaska, even though your client wasn't in Alaska?
It could not, Your Honor. The forum selection clause says that it would be in the principal place of business of the assignee. This is not what is has been termed an open forum selection clause. The Central Ohio versus O'Brien case, where it was found unenforceable because it said basically that on the option of the party, they can bring it anywhere. That is not the case here. And in fact, this is a fact-specific analysis. It is not a hypothetical analysis as to where the appellants could have been brought into court. They have said that they've argued that it could be anywhere in the world, that it could be Alaska, that it could be anywhere. That is not the analysis. The analysis is upon the enforcement of the foreign selection clause as it stands under the circumstances that have presented itself, is that sufficient to have deprived the litigants their day in court? The Chief Justice asked for what the standard would be to show inconvenience, and that right from the United States Supreme Court cases in Bremen and the Carnival Cruise Line case is the standard. And it is a heavy burden, and it is the appellant's burden to show that they, not that it would be inconvenient, not that it would cost them some money, not that it would require them bringing witnesses from out of state, but that they would be deprived of their day in court. Additionally, that there's no question that that is a high threshold under the Supreme Court's cases. The Carnival Cruise Line case required, in a consumer context, not even in a commercial context, required a consumer located in the state of Washington to travel to the state of Florida to litigate her case with allegations of physical impairments and financial impairments that would prevent her from doing that. In comparison to that, these cases are, the showing of inconvenience here is insignificant. And not only that, in these cases, they have admitted not that they would be litigating, that their first impression would be that they would be litigating in their home state. No one has ever said that. Their first impression was that they could be litigating in New Jersey, in Novergence's home state. So it's not a matter of saying...
Also, Novergence hung on to these contracts for about 5 minutes. Right? I mean, they turned them over pretty rapidly to the preferred capital, et cetera.
After they executed the contract.
They executed the contract and then turned around and immediately it was assigned.
That's correct.
How long were they the owners of the contract, so to speak?
It varied, but you're right. It was a matter of a day or a few days. There's no, that's clear.
So there
from the
was,
record.
That was not disclosed. To the customer, was it that we're going to turn around and assign these, and in reality, there was the potential for assignment, but there was not the disclosure that this was going to be immediate.
That's correct. The contract specifically says that these are assignable contracts, but
the
they
bigger
did not.
Scheme here was to get them to sign it, and then immediately it was going to be turned over to the various entities in the various jurisdictions.
And that is not unusual, Your Honor, in the leasing company.
Let me go on.
Sure.
Here. So in reality, the appellant's point here was that there was some knowledge that was not shared with the customer with regards to a more specific identification of the potential forums. And to use general terms in the forum selection clause seems to be an element, certainly has an element of misleading, if not, as they say, overreaching.
I disagree, Your Honor. There is... First of all, they rely upon their interpretation of how this master program agreement between Norvergence and Preferred Capital was supposed to run. That master program agreement allows for the free negotiability of these leases. The The Norvergence did not know where this was going to be assigned. Perhaps it knew that it would probably be assigned fairly rapidly to one of the 35 leasing companies that it did business with, but it did not know that Preferred Capital was going to get these leases, that they were going to be assigned to Preferred Capital in Ohio until Preferred Capital accepted those leases. And that happened.
That happened how soon after they executed the contracts?
It happened fairly quickly in compliance with the Master Program Agreement. The Master Program Agreement required Preferred Capital to look at the credit of the lessee, the credit and their volume of business, and to get back to them within 24 hours. That's what the Master Program Agreement said. And if Preferred Capital, and they often did, said, no, we don't like this customer's credit, we don't want to take the risk of this assignment of the lease, we're going to reject this, Norvergence would then go somewhere else, to Wells Fargo in Iowa, to potentially National City Bank in Ohio.
Did Norvergence do any kind of credit investigation of these lessees before they entered into these contracts?
I believe that they did, Your Honor.
So they knew they were creditworthy, and they knew that they were going to be able to sell these leases, assign these leases momentarily after the ink was dry.
Probably assign them somewhere, correct, but not necessarily to Ohio, to one of the 35 leasing companies that they did business with. So to then require Norvergence to go back and specify and to tell the lessees who are already on notice that these can be assigned, and if they are assigned, that the forum...
What would have been the problem with doing that?
First of all, with the volume of business, it would have been unwieldy to have to go back and...
For the leases that were assigned to Preferred Capital in Ohio, within days, within hours, they could not have contacted and said, by the way, Ohio is where your assignment ended up?
It would have been unwieldy, and not only that, Your Honor, the appellants, the lessees in all these cases, had executed these contracts months, in some cases, before Norvergence executed the contracts. It was not that it was a day or two after the appellants had signed it. The appellants had signed it long ago, agreeing to go to the forum of the assignee, and at that point, the paperwork essentially was out of the hands of the lessee. The lessee had made, had agreed to the leases as they were written.
And counsel, the appellants never saw the master agreement, which said the assignee could be any one of these 35 countries in Iowa or Ohio or any of these other places, correct?
The master program agreement, there was a master program agreement, not the master program agreement that's in the record, but there was a master program agreement between each of the leasing companies. That's correct. And as both the Seventh Circuit and the Ninth District Court of Appeals said, that is no question by design and to promote the negotiability of this commercial paper. The commercial realities of the leasing industry require that these contracts be freely assignable. And yes, Preferred Capital could have taken its leasing portfolio and assigned it to somebody else. That would promote the negotiability of this commercial paper. And at that point, yes, the forum could have gone to the subsequent assignee. That is not a bad thing for the leasing industry. It's also not a bad thing for the customers of the leasing industry. As Judge Posner in the Seventh Circuit's opinion said, if the assigners had to compensate their assignees for having to litigate in an inconvenient forum, they would have to charge a higher price to their customers. This is part and parcel of the terms and conditions of the contract, and it's part and parcel of the pricing of the contract. If the leasing companies and the subsequent assignees are being required then to say that they're going to go to every state in the country or to go to foreign state forums, that then is included in the pricing of these leases and in the pricing of the finances, of the financing. So it's not that the customers are being burdened. While it's true that the individual lessees in having to come to this state are having to meet up to that requirement which they agreed to, they're required to come to Ohio, but, and according in the amicus brief from the Leasing Association speaks to this, that promotes the negotiability of commercial paper. It allows the and it is taken into consideration in the pricing of financing and the availability of financing to businesses to enable them to acquire equipment that they might not otherwise be able to afford.
It's the question of overreaching. It would have been much better had you put that in the forum selection clause, that the potential is there, that it could be any one of 35 states, or we are currently the possibility that your paper could be assigned to these companies, at least giving the various jurisdictions that the party would be at risk to litigate in.
I suppose that could have been done, but the difference between saying that it could have been one of these 35 states and one of the 50 states, I think, is minimal, and it does not allow for further assignments down the chain, potentially.
Although you get your minimum contact waiver, you have a stronger argument then, because the individual who signs that contract is specifically saying, I agree to having my case heard in any one of these 35 jurisdictions.
And again, the difference between saying that I agree to have my case heard in one of 35 jurisdictions and one of 50 jurisdictions, I would argue, is minimal at best, especially when the contract says it can be assigned, and if it will be assigned, then you're going to the forum state of the assignee. I see that my time is up, and I would ask this court to affirm the decision of the Ninth District Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Brien. Mr. Scherer, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
I ask the court to take a look at this case as being the ultimate in forum shopping. Not only are we shopping for the forum, we're shopping for the law continually moves. There's a change up to the time of enforcement of the law and the forum that's going to apply. That's inappropriate. That doesn't stand up to the Bremen test. Preferred Capital or Nevergence could have clarified the ambiguity. Also, I want you to keep in mind that any clause in a contract should be construed against the drafter. The other side refers to a higher price. I can't imagine there being a higher price. These machines were worth only a few thousand bucks, and these people are buying them for hundreds of thousands of dollars. There's a due process waiver right, or there's a due process waiver here. There's no waiver of jurisdiction in the clause. It just refers to venue. Jurisdiction and venue are entirely different. You can waive one without waiving the other. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.
All rise.